All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Beat, post-NFL draft episode of The Beat, brought to you by BetMGM. I am, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along with Brendan Quinn, who his Eagles are one player better, at least, after an exciting weekend. Brendan, how are we doing here?
We got a couple dudes.
Couple players better, at least.
This guy from Alabama, the lineman, might be decent.
Scoot I like this running Giants
back. In the I like this running back from Memphis.
Oh, yeah, he's a good player. I liked him. Gainwell.
He's got some juice. That's good.
Yeah, I forgot they got Gainwell. Screwed over the Giants in the process. You got to like that.
Big win. Big W there.
Got Gettleman in the middle of the whole thing. So
yeah, Howie Roseman, who's been taking some bullets left and right.
He scored
some points by screwing the Giants. So.
Some well-earned bullets, I'll say.
Yeah, how are you recovering from a weekend on the clock?
Yeah, right. I'm fine. Monday after the draft's always a little, like, you know, groggy, I guess, to get back out of it. But got to start looking at next year's crop, I suppose, at some point here, right? But we have other things today. No NFL draft. Well, there might be some questions in there, but we figured we'd open it up to a mailbag today as we had some things we wanted to discuss, and we knew some of them would be asked. So without further, do you want to just get into it here, or do you want to?
Yeah, let's go. Let's get nuts. Talk about?
We got plenty of questions. So
wait, have you and Burke potted since the draft?
No, I think we're going to tomorrow, I believe so.
Tomorrow, okay.
That we'll talk about all things Lions there.
That's good, because I listened to a few of the ones from my our Eagles boys over there who were doing live shows after each round, which were insane, and they were delirious at the end of each one, and it was pretty damn funny. I was like waiting for one to set up, and it ends up with, you know, disciplinary actions from within the company. they were borderline delirious.
I will say this, like Saturday, if they were doing them on Saturday, that's a long Saturday, is a hard day.
They did Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night.
Saturday. So I tweeted this Saturday morning, like Saturday is the Saturday separates the children from the adults in the NFL football, whatever you want to call it. Like, if you're tasked with covering the draft and you've never done it before, you can reasonably get through Thursday and Friday without, like, feeling like you're about to die.
Sure.
Saturday, if your team that you're covering trades down and are like, hey, we just went from 120 to 275, like, have a good day, my man. It's going to be a long haul. So it's a long day, but everybody got through it one way or the other. So
yeah, well,
we do.
Do you have a grade for the Lions before we move on?
No, I mean, like, we'll see. I don't like to do that right off of the draft. I don't think that's fair, but I would say.
Wow. That is very diplomatic of you, man. What kind of sports writer are you?
No, I mean, I think they did well. I would say that nothing they did.
You had our friends at the Free Press took a big dump on the Lions the night of Thursday's first round pick.
They gave the Sewell pick a D, which is which I would disagree with that. I would probably give it an A, considering
I'm allowed to say this because I'm a subscriber.
I am too. We did have, I will say this, we did have Penei Sewell number one on our board a week before the draft. We had Rashawn Slater, who was the guy they chose between Sewell with right up there. So we had all that down, and I think Sewell's an A. I think all the guys that they got are really good athletes, but we'll see, you know, how they pan out.
I will say, and this isn't because I like you guys, but I will say,
players, you know,
going, like, I listened to that pre-draft pod that you did with Burke that day. You nailed it pretty good. I mean,
it was pretty.
You were on top of it pretty good there.
They picked it logically, I think. Like, that's been the read that I've gotten on.
That's the hard thing to predict, is when the team you cover is just going to go rogue and just do something completely insane.
Like, the things that you don't understand are the things like their personal favorites. Like, those are the things you'll never get, and they'll never tell you. So, like, for instance, like, they picked Levi Onwuzurike, a defensive tackle, early in the second round, right? And like, he's a really good defensive tackle. Like, he's, you know, arguably the number one defensive tackle on the board. It was just a matter of, like, where you valued him. So, like, when I went through a bunch of stuff, I thought, okay, well, he would fit with them, but, like, maybe they'll take him with one of their third round picks. Maybe they would take him a different, I don't know. Right. Or maybe they would like somebody else ahead of him. So, like, you just don't know sometimes who they have ahead of what, but, you know, whatever, pretty good either way. So we've got some, college questions to get into today. You ready for
I am absolutely
ready to get jumping here. I've got a good one to start us with.
Here we
one
go.
One that's topical and on
I have one guess. Yeah.
On point here. Let me find it. From Lindsay Axel. Lindsay asks, is BQ personally responsible for Amani Bates decommitting from Michigan State? And do you feel vindicated now that you've been proven correct on the situation? So take it away, my man, on Amani.
Okay. Look, I mean, the decommitment to me, I was always in my mind going to be when, not if, like in some way, you know, I never thought he was going to play there. And most people didn't. Mm-hmm. This is not, I'm not special on this one at all. I think most people, even when he committed, said that's probably never going to happen. And then as, you know, everything transpired from June onward, whatever, kind of all signs continued to point that way. And, look, I think the timing of it was just the timing of it. And the thing that was strangest about his announcement was him saying like, oh, I'm going to leave open the college option. And cause that like made it sound like it's about Michigan State and it's, or like that has something to do with it. And from every conversation I've had that has nothing to do with anything. Michigan State didn't even know he was decommitting.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's, to me, it just seemed like an attention grab when you put in the whole like college part, right? Like not a great look. It didn't seem like it was maybe that well thought out. Because I doubt that was the intention, you know what I mean? To like throw any shade on Michigan State. I doubt that had in any way an end game or a goal. But it's certainly incidental for anyone that's like, has passing interest, right? It's, oh, he's decommitting from Michigan State, but still holding open the college option. Like, why is that? Which, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, Johnny, casual fan, you don't know, right? So that part to me was a little strange. I'm not responsible for for him decommitting.
Do you feel vindicated?
I'm going to even guess. I'm going to go ahead and guess that Amani probably did not read that 6,500-word story. But,
no.
Yeah, and that story, like we talked about at the time, and people who want like further insight into this can go back and listen to the kind of one-off episode that we did that kind of unpacked that whole story. If you want to go fully down the wormhole, but I forget the point I was about.
Can I just say something really quick here?
Of course.
So you wrote a story on this like a month or two ago. When did that story run? The winter or fall? Couple months
ago, probably 6 weeks ago. It was still during the season, 7 weeks ago.
You wrote a big story, and as we talked about on that episode, a lot of it had to do with his dad and his, you know, EJ, you know, was one of the main.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. The story wasn't about him. It was about everything else. Right.
EJ was the main character in the story, and EJ's sort of the world that he's built around his son, right?
Right.
And we said this at the time, but I'll say it again. Like, when you're reading a story like that, it's 6,000 words. There's a lot of stuff going on. It requires some critical thinking skills to decipher all things that are being presented to you and understand what was happening when Amani Bates and his dad and whoever else was in the screen, when they went on SportsCenter with an Ipsy Prep t-shirt on in June of last year and said, we're committing to Michigan State. They did it to get an Ipsy Prep t-shirt on television. I can say this. I don't cover Amani Bates. I don't care. They did it to get an Ipsy Prep t-shirt on television. They like Michigan State. They did it, I think, to probably give them some juice too, to be like, if Amani were to go to college, this is where he would go. Similar to what we always hear with like LeBron and Ohio State, right? Now, the question that I have, I guess, the weird one for me that I can't quite understand is, like you just mentioned, it was the whole like, why would he say I'm decommitting, but I'm still leaving open like the possibility of going, which is just like, what? Like, that's the one that's weird to me, I guess. And this whole thing, the rest of it made sense. It was just whatever. I mean, if you didn't be serious, then it's whatever. But like, I guess the one thing that I look at and say, like, I don't understand that would be the, you know, what's this about? You know, you're leaving your options open. I guess maybe is that like, I'm leaving my options open. I guess that would include Michigan State. I don't know. Like, I don't know what that means, but that's the weird.
So let's go through some of these. On like the ESPN announcement thing, like, yeah, I mean, look, when they reached out to ESPN originally, it was
we're announcing the creation of IPSY Prep. And
we want to do it on
down the road on them. And like, there's been various versions of how this all went down in kind of the basketball ecosystem, right? The rumors of how it went down. And, you know, like the original story I was told was the Bateses reached out, said, we want to announce IPSY Prep. ESPN said, this doesn't rise to the level of a live spot on Sports Center. And then they said, we'll do Michigan State, right? But that story was rebuffed. It was in my reporting, like, because I got someone at ESPN who was actually like on the production side of it to be like, no, they came first with
the Michigan State thing
with IPSY Prep. No, they came first with IPSY Prep, and we were willing to go down the road with them. And then they were like, by the way, we're also going to announce Michigan State.
Okay.
And then and ESPN people were like, wait, that's the much bigger news. Like,
let's just do
That's the
story. Okay.
We'll talk about IPSY Prep, but.
Yeah,
but Michigan State is the story, not IPSY Prep.
I see what you're saying.
That's how it got rebuffed. And actually, Steve Haney, who is a familiar name for people who follow the shenanigans of NCAA basketball over the last 5 years and the FBI case, like he was right and he defended Christian Dawkins. He was actually the go-between on from the Bates contacting ESPN. But anywho, so that's that. But the point you're saying is right, though. The news in their mind last year was the creation of IPSY Prep as this vehicle for Amani to get to where he's going. Right. Some people happen to believe that place was Michigan State, and that was incorrect. Right.
You can believe whatever you want. Like that's
right.
You know what I mean?
So the part about like reading that story with like a level of tact is true though. Like there was a lot going on there, and it is. It's all about control. It's all about kind of couriering him through all of these years where, you know, because of these stupid rules about, you know, like he would be drafted this year if he could be, but he can't.
Oh, yeah, he would have been drafted last year if he could be.
so they just have to kind of get him to this finish line. And, you know, their plans for how. I no idea. I mean, if I had a bet right now, I'd say he's going to be at IPSY Prep next year.
Best rule of thumb for guys like this, and they come around very rarely, but like the regular rules don't apply and how you go about thinking of how they do things. So when a kid that good tells you that he's committed to play basketball at Michigan State, like let's just stop for a second and breathe and understand what he's saying and how real that's not. You can tell yourself anything you want to tell yourself, but let me ask you this question, Brendan, as someone who covers Michigan State and would know, when Amani Bates goes on TV in June of 2020 and with his family and says, I'm going to go commit to Michigan State, did Tom Izzo know that he was going to go do that 1 minute before he did it?
Yes.
20 minutes before he did it.
So 24 hours.
24 hours. Okay. 25. So he didn't know 24 hours.
Some of the people on the staff did not know until it was going down. Right.
Okay. Right. So I think that right there.
Yeah, I mean, it was totally out of the blue. It was totally random. It would never made sense. Nobody there ever really thought that he was going to be playing there. They were recruiting. I made this point on a radio show yesterday.
And it's not a big deal. Like, it's not that big a deal.
It's really not a big deal in terms of their planning. You know, like, sure, in the back of their mind, they're like, hey, if this dude wants to show up and play, then okay. You know, they were not banking on it. And if anything, in terms of them trying to recruit out the 2022 class, like this probably helps a little bit because that had to have been a very strange conversation you're having with recruits where you're like, so Amani's committed for 2022. We don't actually think he's going to play here in 2022. So you can come here. Those minutes are available, right? Like,
but unless he changed his mind,
it just left a program in a very strange gray area. And, you know, people would still say Amani Bates is committed to Michigan State. And like when everyone that knows is rolling their eyes, like that's not a great spot for anyone to be in. Right. Like, it's messy. Is the word that I would use.
So, I think there was good intentions behind that, but it was messy. I think the intentions were, I don't know about good. The intentions were positive, I would say, would maybe be the better word. I don't think they're innocent.
It certainly wasn't to be at anyone's detriment, right?
No, I think they were trying to probably help Michigan State. Maybe they thought they were, and maybe Izzo was
They were pissed about the recruiting thing. They were pissed that everyone on it just punted on them.
Yeah, like
Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, Carolina, everyone just ignored him because
and maybe that's the reward to to Izzo there. That's how I looked at it at the time. Was like,
yeah, I mean, he put in the effort, man.
Yeah, you recruited us. Like, you, we have a relationship. No matter what happens, I think Tom said that, right? Like, no matter what happens with, they're going to be tight or to some degree. Like, right. If Imani needs something right. in 10 years and needs to call Tom, he can do that. Like, and I think that that's how Tom recruits. Right. And I think that that's sort of a testament to him as a recruiter. And I thought when I saw that, that that was EJ saying, like, we like Tom Izzo a lot. And if we want to link him to us, then that's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that that's what it was. And I just don't think there was any more to it.
Right. On the other part of that question, you know, the vindication part.
you feel vindicated?
No, I mean, that's ridiculous. But
should we hit the dashboard confessional music?
I will.
Before we can move on.
I will say this, like, it, things like this should, like, for, I do understand natural skepticism among readers and fans and stuff like that, especially if you're not, like, overly familiar with who writes what or who does what and what way and blah, 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 blah. Like, that's fine. You know what yep. I mean? Like, whatever. And a lot of the stuff that you hear from, you know, is a 16-year-old, right? Who's just, is a flamethrower on Twitter and we have no, you know, I have no idea. But,
yeah.
There was a, I did get a lot of like, oh, you know, you said that everyone that you spoke to for it said that he wasn't going to play at Michigan State, but you didn't name names. So this is bullshit. You made it up. You have an agenda, blah, blah, blah. Like, the, for me to write that sentence in print, like, with something like that. No, no, no. Like, I'm saying the way that it was written.
Okay.
Like, you need to be so sure about it to actually write that sentence in print. Because here's the thing. I didn't need to even write that at all. But when I was told what I was told by the people that I who can't have it as a quote on their name, right?
And,
there
and
are,
you,
there
and
are
again,
ways that, that will, these things work.
Let me interject. You have to. As a reader, you have to understand that. You have to understand why people like that he is quoting right there cannot have their name on that quote. Right. You have to understand that. That is not a damaging quote. That is not something that's meant to hurt anyone. That is something that can be misconstrued, but is someone who would know giving an honest assessment. Go ahead.
Continue, right. Sir. And it was multiple, right. multiple people who were extremely, extremely close on all sides of things. Like,
right.
it was locked up. There was no, I felt 1,000% comfortable writing that. And then of course it got, you know, peeled out as one thing that gets aggregated and it turned into a thing that kind of overshadowed things a little bit. But like the notion that anyone would make that up, and look, are there people out there that would have one person tell them that and write it? Sure. Probably. But like,
yeah, like
any, look at the look at the amount of, you know, of what went into that story, and then ask yourself if reasonably if the writer,
how many people were talked to for this, you know?
The writer would just throw that in there willy nilly, like, hey, who gives a shit? This isn't a big deal, you know what I mean?
Like, I can understand the general skepticism from the public when it comes to anonymous sourcing. We talked about this before we started the podcast. Like, the great example this weekend from the draft was, you know, the 49ers drafting Trey Lance at number 3. And that was the big mystery of the draft. That was the biggest mystery in sports for the last 8 weeks, you know, right? Was San Francisco traded up in the draft? They were going to go to number 3. And it was revealed by God, who knows who, that they wanted to draft Mac Jones at number 3 6 weeks ago. And this started a whole hailstorm of everything else. None of that was attributed to anybody within the 49ers organization other than just like it was in the ether. And so we see stuff like that. And then I think what you see, and I can understand where a casual reader would read this and be like, well, fuck that. Like, this was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So what you end up seeing is just like people that are comfortable talking to people that are 12 hands removed from a situation and are comfortable citing them as a source. If you pay attention close enough, you can always find out who does that, and you can always find out who doesn't.
Right.
And I, now the hard part for the reader is you shouldn't have to pay that close of attention, right? Like, that's our job. You shouldn't have to go over every single bullshit item that a national whatever throws out there over the course of an 8 week period to see how many times they've contradicted themselves. But that's the world we live in, right? Like, that's the situation. I understand it. But like when somebody like Brandon writes that story and there's all those voices who are on the record talking, you know, you sort of need to make sure. And I think the majority of people understood what you're saying, but like it's sort of an indictment on the media today because, you know, a line in a 6,000 word story in the bottom third of it can't be pulled out and aggregated. That's just fucking ridiculous.
Right.
Like, that's just like, what? Like,
well, and Imani came out that day, I remember, and said, you know, put something out there like, I speak for myself or blah, blah, blah. But like, he was responding to the aggregations.
The fans. Yeah, right.
He was responding to the aggregations that were all these headlines that were just, Imani Bates is not going to Michigan State. And I'm sitting there like, oh, God. And now I probably should have foreseen that that was going to be peeled off like that. But
yes, you know, I thought I knew it. I think we probably talked about that. Like, this is immediately how it's going to be perceived.
Yeah. So
it's fine. You know,
but that was a whiff. But yeah, he responded to that. And people were like, see, Imani's calling you on bullshit. I'm like, I really don't think that's what this is. But and, you know, it was given. You know, we tried to talk to him for the story and they declined and said I could submit questions.
I just want people to understand
that he would write, that he would respond to in writing. And
people to understand something. And I think that they know this from the two of us. If either person here talking to you puts something that says a source close to or anonymous, whatever the fuck, like understand that both of us, if we put that in a story, like went through like, you know, stomach pain inducing anxiety over whether or not to put that in the story.
Sure.
Okay? Like, understand that that is something that we, you know, when you talk about everybody has things in their job, like those are things that we lay at, you know, you stare at the ceiling at 4 a.m. being like, should I take that out?
Right.
Okay. Like that's, those are conversations that actually happen and you're trying your best to protect all things and all sides of that. And you have to understand for most writers, I would say that's a pretty agonizing situation. For a lot of
certainly
writers,
most people, yeah.
For a lot of writers, it's not. It's bullshit. They do make it up. There are people out there that make stuff up that just say "source says," and you're like, "whatever," right? Like that's it happens. But for most of us who do it properly, I think that that's how I would say it. It's a pretty tough thing. Like if you know you have to be able to put a perspective like that in there, but you can't do it, it's hard because you're just like you don't want yourself to be exposed or somebody to come back on you, but you know, it is what it is.
I will say, to put a pin in this thing, if I have one hope here, I do hope that they just get their hands a little bit more around this thing for the good of the guy, of Imani. Like, you know, this thing is just a rocket. Like I said, I think I wrote the story, like he's, you know, straddling a rocket ship.
Yeah. You need to calm the messaging down a little bit, maybe. And just, like this, play basketball.
I said, you know, on Friday when it all went down, I called a guy in his kind of inner circle. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, listen, man, I'm not here to tell you how to do anything or anything like that. But, you know,
you guys need to
the whole part about leaving college open, I'm like, you got to realize how that gets interpreted, you know, like, and like what thought is being put into how that gets worded or who is handling, you know, like that's stuff that should probably be given a little bit more consideration. You know, you just throw that in there and, you know, you're, all you're doing is clouding things a little bit. And now, and at the same time, I don't think they give two flying shits what people say about Imani and on to a degree,
I just don't think it's something that he needs to be.
But then
about,
there is, there is mass sensitivity on other things. And what some people might say about, you know, his trajectory and things like that. So it's like, they like to play it on one hand, we don't care, but then somebody will say something that clearly bothers them and it becomes reactionary. And you're like, you know, there's handling things with a little tact here should be at the forefront of getting this thing to draft day.
I just think that if something happens to where he has to go on Twitter and talk about how it's bothering him, then you probably just need to leave it alone now. Like, so it's like, you're just creating issues that don't need to be created. I mean, it seems like at this point, but either way.
All right. What else we got? Do you want me to read one?
Yeah, go for it.
Let's see here.
Got somebody asking you for a P.O. box to send you a Devonta Smith jersey here. Evan wants
you just send it to Washtenaw Golf Club. I'll pick it up in June.
Whenever I get in.
Hopefully when I'm back on the course. What's the deal with the new UM beam me up Scotty transfer portal landing? Does he fit with Juwan's scheme? I think this is just a question about Devontae Jones. Yeah, and like it's going to be interesting to see how these programs kind of, you know, lean on the portal more and more. And Michigan is obviously, you know, back to back years getting what looks like a lead point guard out of it is notable. I think he fits nicely. He can play out of ball screens. We talked for a while for a story that we ran on Saturday, and you know, he was effusive in saying that I'm a pass first point guard. People have it wrong. They think that I'm a scoring guard because of what I was asked to do at Coastal Carolina.
Sounds familiar.
It did. It really, I mean, it was echoes of Mike Smith.
Sounds familiar.
You know, Mike's probably a little bit of a better 3-point shooter than sure. Devontae Jones. The numbers spell that out. And if you look at him on film, you're like, Mike Smith looks like a 3-point shooter. Mm-hmm. Devontae Jones has made some threes, but I look at his form and that's just like, oh yeah, yeah. I asked him, I'm like, where did you learn to shoot that way? He's like, oh, I was self-taught.
I bet you were.
Yeah, right. It's kind of, it looks like a little Eli Brooks-ish, like it's flat-footed, but it's even more so off the bridge of his nose.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Like so he's got kind of a funky form. It can go in. Yeah. He's had decent stretches. Last year, he probably would have finished a little bit better if he didn't. He really went cold on the last 10 games of the year. But he can make decisions out of the ball screen. I think he gives them experience in the backcourt. I think more than anything, he allows everyone to fit better roles that you'd want them in. So Eli Brooks gets to stay off the ball and just be Eli Brooks, and Frankie Collins gets to come along with, you know, a natural maturation as a freshman point guard. You're not just asking him to maybe, you know, just do things that are above and beyond what you'd be wanting to ask a freshman point guard for, especially when you're a team that has Hunter Dickinson for, you know, probably one more year, right? Like if you have a potential first, second team All-American center, you want to surround him with as much as you can to get as much out of the situation as possible. Cause you know, with the talent that they have coming in and with Dickinson back and with Eli deciding to play another year, like, you know, they're poised, they're in position to make another run at this thing. So yeah, I think it gives them a little breathing room in the backcourt. I'll be curious to see just how good he is. It's so hard to project these up transfers. And we've talked about this a number of times that, like, you know, Mike Smith is not the norm. Mm-hmm. You know, Mike Smith's kind of an outlier in terms of you going from the Ivy League to the Big Ten and being as productive as he was. That's, you just don't see that often. So, you know, going from the, what the hell is Coastal in? I messed this up the other day. The Big South. In the Big South. God,
Big West? I have no idea.
No, not the Big West. They're in Myrtle Beach.
The Chanticleers? Isn't that their nickname?
Chanticleers? Chanticleers? I don't.
The Chandeliers? The Coastal Carolina Chanticleers.
They're in the Sun Belt. That's what they are.
Oh, my God. Are they in the Sun Belt now?
Yeah. So going from the Sun Belt to.
Sun Belt looked like that when I was banging, man, back in the day. Coastal Carolina wasn't in the Sun Belt in my day.
No,
that's a new addition, I feel like.
So you go from playing UT Arlington and Arkansas State and Louisiana Monroe to playing
Coastal Carolina and UT Arlington are in the same goddamn conference.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. You want to hear the Sun Belt? You want the whole Sun Belt?
Yeah, yeah. What's the whole thing now? Because I know what it used to be.
This is it for basketball. I don't know what it is for football,
it's
but
the same.
Yeah, so Georgia State, Coastal Carolina, South Alabama.
Yep, original member.
App State.
Oh.
Georgia Southern.
Yep.
Troy.
Yep. Original member.
Texas State. Ugh. Louisiana.
Yep.
UT Arlington. So I guess Louisiana. Yeah, would that be the Raging Cajuns? Is that just
Louisiana? No, Louisiana is Lafayette. Yeah, that's them.
They
call themselves Louisiana.
Yeah. UT Arlington.
And then Monroe was
there. Arkansas State, Little Rock, and Louisiana Monroe.
Can I tell you that I've been to like 8 of those campuses in my career? Multiple times.
I've been to
Troy like 5 times. I
That's incredible. I've been to App State, been to Boone.
I've never been to Boone. I've been to Monroe. I've been to Lafayette. I've been to...
Well, because App State used to be in the SoCon when I was covering Chattanooga for a year. Right.
They ever won AA. So was Georgia Southern was the big time. Georgia Southern was the big deal back then. Anyway, we're off track here. This is all right, next question.
So I like Devontae Jones' addition. I think it helps out. There you go.
Okay, let's get to the question of questions here for this week. Actually, no. Here's another one I want to... Scott Davis asked two questions that were good. I want to ask this one first of Brendan. Scott says, Brendan, I lived in Chattanooga for 10 years. And we know Brendan lived in Chattanooga as well. Mm-hmm. So Scott lived in Chattanooga for 10 years, and he watched Tennessee, the Vols, struggle, for a decade under the weight of growing success of their rivals. He says, based on your experience around both places, is Joe Milton's new home just the SEC equivalent of what he just left? Oh, my God.
Man. It's a hell of a good point. I like that. I like that a lot.
Scott always asks good questions. That is a good question.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty close. And in terms of, like, it goes beyond just, like, success and stuff like that. I think, you know, Michigan's certainly been has been better than Tennessee in the last.
Yeah, that's fair.
Even with the deficiencies.
It's been pretty bad for the Vols.
But, like, I mean, Tennessee, what a steaming pile, man. Just outrageous. Like, for all of the nonsense that's happened at Michigan, it's like times
not even close.
10. Yeah, right. And that's Tennessee, you know? Like, I mean, I was there for the Lane Kiffin into Derek Dooley into Butch Jones. Oh, and it was just weekly, like, sitcom chaos stuff where you're just like, this place is not real life.
And that was, 2.5 years? Wasn't that long.
Yeah, it was not that long at all. Right. So, let's see. I would say in terms of, like, the desperation of the fan base, though, to have their dedication validated, though, it is identical. Yeah. And the fact that, like, everyone is the savior, there's a lot of that is. And I mean, that's pretty much every program. But
the more
desperate you are, the more hyperbolic that stuff is. That, like, the next guy coming in, he's going to be the guy to turn around the whole program and be the savior of the fucking school, right? Like, that's different. When you have success, you still hype up guys, but it's different than when, like, your self-identity is being attached to this kid being, you know,
everything you hope,
transcendent player. Yeah. So I'm sure, I mean, I can already see the boys at MaQuest, which is like the Rivals equivalent down there in Knoxville. My man Ball Rob Lewis. Quest. My Love man it. Rob Lewis is queuing up some film of Milton playing against Minnesota, and they are just, like, frothing at the mouth.
I was gonna say there's, like, two games. There's not even anything to go on.
They're ready.
They have gone over everything from his sophomore season at Olympia in Orlando and
he does have a couple clips, though, where he just uncorks.
Joe Milton is a very physically talented quarterback. Like, we've been through this. I had people last fall that were like, Nick, what the hell are you talking about? He sucks. And I'm like, he's not ready. Like, he's not polished, but he can throw the ball anywhere he wants. He can do. Yes. He has all these things. He's fitting with, why am I blanking on the dude's name? Josh Heupel.
Yeah, I was going to say, dude, if they get some guys around here.
We used to talk about this. So, like, we used to talk about this. And it's not just because Josh Heupel coached at UCF and Joe is from Orlando, which maybe that's part of it, right? Maybe he knew. Although, I don't know if they crossed paths. I don't know if Scott Frost was still there. Whatever. But, like, UCF's offense, the stuff they ran with Mackenzie Milton, is perfect for Joe. It's perfect. We used to talk about this back when I used to talk about this with Orion all the time at the Free Press when we would do that podcast early in when Patterson was still at Michigan and the conversation about what are they going to do with McCaffrey and Milton, right? Which we all know what happened there, right? Jesus Christ. Anyway, the conversation would be like, what are they going to do? Who are they going to pick? And my answer, I always said, I thought it needed to be Milton. I was like, he was younger. He had more time physically, all these things. But I also said, the last thing you are going to want to do is wake up in 2 years, turn on the TV and watch Joe Milton throw for 400 yards rushed for 150 and lead Central Florida and Josh Heupel to a 65-0 win in some bowl game, mm-hmm. right? That you're like, what's happening here? I'm going to tell you, I don't know if it's going to work at Tennessee because, like you said, Brendan, and like Scott pointed out, like the self-awareness issue there and the unfair expectations they levy on people and how that can sort of mess with college kids is just a real problem. Sure. It doesn't get talked about enough, but it is. So that could be an issue. But like, if it clicks, I think it could work.
I mean, the bigger concern from everything that like I've seen might not read work, on though. It might Tennessee not, is, know? Yeah, yeah, I mean, the like the infrastructure for a functioning offense. I don't right. know how much, like, I don't know how much yeah. of an offensive line they have. Like they just
haven't been, no support. Yeah.
They haven't been able to keep the offense on the field yeah. in the SEC and just been, you know, that's why they just get pounded.
That's the other thing. It's the SEC and his, and the rawness right. of his game. It's not going to work in the SEC. I mean, he got away with things here that he won't get away with there. And he didn't get away with much here to be clear. I mean, sure. you know, a lot of his mistakes got capitalized on, but there were a number of throws he made here that if I could just think off the top of my head that if he's throwing it yeah. against Alabama, it's
hey, maybe they could have thrown a swing pass or two to the running back who was just drafted in the fourth round of the NFL draft, who had what, 16 touches last year?
Which one? One of the 17 guys they had drafted.
I mean,
anyway, let's go forward here. We have a couple questions on all this. Scott's second question. Nick, is this your 10th year on the Michigan beat? It's my 11th year, actually, Scott. So thank you for bringing that up.
Entering your 11th, right?
Entering my 11th season.
Wow.
Did you think there was any chance that Michigan football wouldn't win a Big Ten title in your first decade covering the program? And what do you think is the biggest / best Michigan football victory you have covered?
Okay. There's a lot to unpack here. This is an incredible question.
I told you. We should have had Scott on the show.
Wait. So first of all, I want to ask you, did you think there was any chance you were going to cover Michigan for 10 years when you first started?
I'm sure that thought never even entered my brain. I don't think that was something that I ever considered or thought about or entertained. Not that I thought it was impossible. I just didn't think about it probably at all. Right. If I'm just going to be right. honest. Yeah.
Right.
So no, I did not think about that.
I feel like when I got here, we were still talking about the fact of like, there's no way this lasts, right? We're both going to be needing to work.
Both gonna get fired.
Your fallback plan was pumping gas. Mine was bartending.
Oh, yeah, right. I would say that I will. So I'll start at the top of that question. Like, did you think that it was possible that you could go through a decade and they wouldn't win a Big Ten title? My answer to that is I probably thought it was more possible than most people. Yeah. Because I think if you came in, I came in from having left the area and I moved away when, you know, Lloyd Carr retired basically and Rich Rod came in and everything changed. And, you know, I think if you were here and you were following the team and you know, depending on who you listened to and who you read, you were probably told a lot of things that we hear a lot right now about how things are great and blah, blah, blah. But in reality, when you looked on the outside looking in, you saw a situation go from when Lloyd Carr retired and Rich Rodriguez fizzled, Michigan went from, you know, the specialness of Michigan was gone. From my perspective, it was gone in that moment for those kids in that time. The only thing that gave me hesitation that I thought maybe Brady Hoke would have a chance to get in was that Tressel had to go, right? Like they'd beaten Ohio State that year and you didn't know what was going to happen with Ohio State. You've pretty much figured, I go back to this all the time, before Urban Meyer became the, no doubt he was going to be the guy that replaced Tressel. Like we talked about, it was like Bo Pelini, Mark D'Antonio. Yeah.
Jesus, right.
Like D'Antonio would have been probably the best option there. I would think.
Right.
And Mark might've been great. I don't know. It would have been probably similar to Tressel, I would think. But once Urban got there, I was like, no, I'm like, they're not pulling the car over for you. Like, it's going to be very, very difficult. I thought it was possible. They made it through that, you know, because the more time you went on, the deeper you got into it. You know, did I think that on day one of the job, I would cover the team for 10 years and they wouldn't win a Big Ten title? Probably not. I probably assumed right. they would have won one somewhere in there. Right. Like, I certainly thought it was possible. I heard people tell me that all the time. I never thought this was possible. I'm like, I thought it was possible. Why isn't it possible? When you lose the thing that makes you special and you can't replace it, you're not special anymore. You can tell yourself you are all you want. When Lloyd Carr left and they lost that bridge of 40 years, it was gone. And you can't just, you've been trying to recreate it ever since. And here we are.
In the 10 years you've been doing this, have you come to an answer, or have you come upon
an answer to the question of, is Michigan's best course to try to replicate what made it special or try to find a new thing that makes it special?
Well, I know what the answer is. I've come to my opinion on the answer, and it's the latter. And that's the situation I think that they're in now. And I think that that's the crossroad that a lot of people, and I'm not foolish to this, to think that I'm, you know, that my perspective or opinion is correct. I don't know if I would say that. I would say that there are people who would tell you, you know, that I talk to, who will say that I believe, you know, smart people who would say, I believe you can go forward with, you know, sort of new ideas, but you can keep the things that made Michigan, Michigan, and you can embrace them. And I can understand that too. I think that, you know, a lot of the recent staffing hires that we saw, you know, in the assistant side of things speaks to that a little bit, you know, like Mike and Bellamy and some of those guys, like they have an attachment. And I, you know, over time, and as I've grown up and doing this job and been exposed to it more, I used to think in my mid 20s, like, this tradition shit is bullshit. Who cares? Like, who cares about any of this shit? Nobody cares. Like, these kids don't care. I used to, you know, in your mid 20s and you're covering college football, you only think of it from the perspective of the recruit because you're closest to them in age. And my whole thing back then was like, yeah, nobody cares. They don't care that you won a Heisman Trophy 15 years ago or whatever. It's not a thing. But like, as time has gone on, I've become more, you're around it. And it does matter when they get here that they have people here who, if you have any kind of uniqueness to your place, that they have people here who can properly explain that to them. Like when I get on the phone with like Jordan Lewis and talk to Jordan about why he wanted to go to Michigan and why he still, even though Jordan gets mad at Michigan a lot, why he still loves the place. Like when you talk to somebody like that, it makes sense, right? Like it makes sense. And those type of people need to be around your football program. And I think that Michigan's gone 100 different directions over the years trying to figure out what to do, but like you can go forward in a new direction. But I do think that it is important to make sure that you have people who can offer that unique perspective at the place you're at, because if you're not special, if you don't have that kind of like uniqueness to you, then what are you? You're nothing. You're just like one of the, you're a number in the crowd. And it's far more easy for teams to go into that than I think fans ever realize, that it's, you're far closer to being a number in the crowd than you are to being. Alabama is as close to being a number in the crowd, as closer than people realize. If Saban left tomorrow, what the fuck, what do you think they're going to do? They're just going to keep going. Like nothing's going to change. I mean, that's college athletics. So, I mean, I think that, you know, you do have to have those threads. I've become more, the Michigan man thing was always overbearing. It's overdone, but I do think the threads do need to exist. And I think they're important.
Yeah. And I mean, I do think that stuff's important also for, you know, there's a reason that people have the emotional attachment that they do. Yeah. And there's a reason that you put, you know, 108,000 asses into that hole, you know,
that's like, it,
you know,
right there. Yeah.
And it's not simply, oh, that's my school, right? It's the memories. You kind of start to identify yourself with where you were when this happened and this player and that player, and this coach, like, you know, like this is
what we do. This is who we are. Right. This is how we do things. It's not always perfect. It doesn't always work,
but then it can border on an impediment.
Right. It can, you have to balance it. Right. But it's like, this is what we do. This is who we are. We don't apologize for it. It doesn't always work, but we're okay with it because we understand it and we've embraced it. Like, you have to have some thread of that. And Michigan, I think, and this is the thing that nobody can figure out with the Harbaugh thing, is that they lost that to a degree with a guy running the program that above all understands that. And that's the hard thing. That's like, and he does, like, Jim Harbaugh knows all those things, but like how that gets frayed with someone like that as your head coach is the thing that I think boggles most minds. But it's also like, there's so much more to the picture than just that, you know, like Ohio State being Ohio State is the biggest reason why Michigan hasn't won the Big Ten in 10 years. I mean, like that's the easiest answer to the whole situation there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'll say when I came in 2013, and I remember the week I accepted the job at MLive, Tennessee was playing at Florida in a day game. And this was Tennessee.
Ooh, big game.
Tennessee was all, you know, again, spilling gas all over the place. And it was very clear, you know, and everyone
that,
at the
that Dooley?
That was Dooley. Yeah. And like, you know, I'm there and it's, you know, the News Sentinel is this great place with, you know, older writers who've been around for 25 years back to Fulmer and seen all this shit.
Right.
And, you know, Dooley had like his introductory press conference and John Adams was like, this guy's going to be fired in 2 years. And he was right.
he was 100% correct.
We were at Florida and it was four of us, I think. And I'm trying to think if Evan Woodbury would have been down there too, but it was me, Mike Strange, John Adams.
What a crew.
And I think Woodbury. And
what a crew. Is this where you left the rental car on the whole game?
No, that was at Oregon. But but we were at a bar that night.
Yeah.
And I knew I was going to Ann Arbor. And I don't know if I had told, you know, the guys yet, but I think in my head, whether I'd formally done so or not, I knew I was taking the job. And we were sitting at a bar, you know, some sports bar, and that night was Michigan Notre Dame.
Okay.
And
they won that. Yeah, definitely.
They won that game. I just looked it up. That was the game they won 41-30.
Yeah, that was
I remember. I'm just watching this game at this bar, right? You know, it's a night game, so the camera's panning and it's the maize pom poms all going. I'm sitting there and I'm wide eyed. I'm like, this is gonna be awesome. You know, like this place. won that game, and I'm like, this is just, and they, the program had some juice then, and it was.
I would agree with that. Yeah,
it was still, I think Brady as you know a as an answer.
Yeah,
and if you would have told me then, that night, like this place, they're not going to win a Big Ten championship, and you're going to be there for
eight years.
I would not have bought it at all. I just thought. You know, what an incredible place and all the history and all that stuff. And I was so geeked up to come up here and, you know,
that was the peak. Football that program, was the high,
but I'm still happy to be here.
It was never, that was the highest, the last peak for Brady Hoke. It never got that high again. That was the, you know, like 2011, they went 11-2. They had, you know, those kind of, and Scott asked the question, like, what's the most impressive win?
Sure.
And it would probably be those two Notre Dame games, the 2011 Notre Dame game where they kind of pulled it out of their ass. And then the 2013 Notre Dame game was the one where they set the attendance record and Mark Harmon was here. You weren't here. You don't remember Mark Harmon being here. Mark Harmon came and did a press conference with us because Tom Harmon got honored or whatever for the, that's the game where Devin wore the 98 jersey for the first time. Right.
Yeah.
And it was the best game, maybe outside of that Ohio State game when he hurt his foot. It was probably the best game I remember Devin playing outside of that Ohio State game. He was so good. Mm. He looked like some kind of weird cross between like Vince Young and Denard and somebody else, you know, that you were like, what the hell is this? Like,
yeah,
he was throwing back shoulders to Gallen. Like it was nothing. Like he looked like a first round pick, bottom line. And you thought, I remember talking to Josh Schlachter about that night. Cause I was like, they got it here. This is if the rest of the team, I didn't think was very good. They were super young and they had a lot of guys. They were overvalued. I thought that year, cause the team I thought was not ready, but I was like, if this guy's going to be a monster, like who gives a shit? They're going to be fine. They're going to win 9 or 10 games and Brady's going to be fine, but that's not what happened. So yeah, that was the end of it. The beginning of the end right there, I guess the beginning of the end, I think is probably in late 2012 when they trotted Bellamy out there instead of Devin after Robinson got hurt at Nebraska. Mm. But I would say that Notre Dame game in 2013 is probably the top one there. The top one of Harbaugh would probably be the Florida Bowl game, the Citrus Bowl, the first year where they just beat the shit out of them. That's the one where I thought, and again, I'll take you back. I mean, I left that game thinking like they've got it here. They're bringing everybody back. They're really good and they're totally bought in. And I don't care, you know, I thought they had a team around whatever quarterback they would have the next season and it would be fine. But that was that Florida Bowl game was the one where I was like, okay, this is probably going to work. Like this is Harbaugh's got it. He's got them believing in what he wants. Like it's going to work. And then it didn't. So there's been a couple of those, but you know, I don't know for all the reasons we've talked about for 100 times, it didn't work. Or it didn't last anyway.
I want to get your take on, because we just spent this time on Michigan, the column that Colton wrote.
Oh, yeah.
For Sunday.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Michigan State draft streak snapped and blah, 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 blah.
And 80 years, something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, man. And, you know, kudos to Colton for you know, taking a few steps back and going wide lens on that thing and tracing it back to just kind of how – how much the end of the D'Antonio era kind of derailed that program, and you know, not capitalizing on the most successful era of modern program history to go from where they were at the height of the, you know, D'Antonio's time there to, you know, this is the remnants of it. They didn't have a draftable player on the roster.
That's it.
What was your read?
So happy Colton wrote it, because like, not only was I happy that he wrote it, because I think it was really good. He did a really good job. Like, and I got a Slack message at 5 a.m. Sunday from Colton wanting me to read it. That's how long he worked on it. So he did a very, very good job. I was glad he wrote it, because like, we have talked about that for 2 years. That's why. There is no other answer. Like, right, when the draft ends and Michigan State doesn't have a guy, and people are looking around being like, why didn't they have a guy drafted? There's one answer. You lost your margin for error. The end of the Mark D'Antonio, you know, era, we talked about it on the podcast 2 weeks ago. Like, but when you asked me, is Shakur Brown going to get picked? And I said, I don't know. Is anybody going to get picked? And I said, I don't know. They might not have a guy picked. Sure. And the reason they might not have a guy picked is because we talked a lot about over the years, the comparisons between the way D'Antonio and John Beilein recruited. Like, it was a world-class, explain this in the story, like, D'Antonio was a world-class evaluator of safeties, and I would argue defensive tackles, you know, premium positions where if you can find dudes there, no one in college football is scoring on you. If you are a smart coach who knows what he's doing, and he evaluated those spots better than anybody, he could find guys, you know, in a pile of rubble, and they turned into, he did it multiple times. But when those guys, when you stop finding those guys and they stop hitting, the bottom rusts out and everything collapses. And that's what happened in 2016. And then it just continued. And you saw, the terms that we use, I mean, like a death rattle would be probably too graphic, but like 2017 was like a tremor. They had a good year, but it was like, I looked at that almost as like, it wasn't accidental, because the team played hard and they worked hard and they fought for each other, but like, they were not that talented. The offense wasn't very good. They got some wins that year against teams that they had no business beating. Like, it was a mirage. It wasn't real. And then as you continue to peel the roster back, you look forward and here they are. So I thought it was a great, great story by Colton. And he would know that better than anybody, obviously someone who's every day watching it, but like, I was really glad he wrote it, because we talked about that a ton. Like, even when D'Antonio was finishing in 2018, 2019, like, you could see it. It was just like, this is not going to be what you think it is. It's not going to be what you remember in 3 years. It's going to be the opposite.
Right.
You know,
this is going to
say that we would say that to people at the time. And yeah,
it's going to be a test.
It was hard to say. For Tucker. Yeah, go ahead.
For Tucker. I mean, it's this idea of, you mentioned it on our last pod when we talked about the draft. You said, you know, he can turn this into a positive by selling the playing time. Like, look, man, we're depleted and you can come in here and make an impact. Well, you know, at the same time, you know, there's a reason that the programs that produce pros get more pros, you know, like, you want to sell that in recruiting. And yeah, I mean, if Mel Tucker can spin this thing into a positive, that all credit to him, but that's easier said than done, man.
Well, right. In terms of recruiting, that's all you can do. Is be like, come in here and start if you want, right? Like, that's the only thing you can do. But to the grander point, and this is the other part of this, like, D'Antonio was a, you know, world-class evaluator of these positions, but also developer. So like, these guys got here and they got to where they needed to go, right? Like, he saw something in them. We talked about that too with St. Juiced. Some of these Michigan guys that Harbaugh took a chance on and then sort of like dropped the rope midway through and was like, I just don't know if this is going to be worth it. D'Antonio didn't do that. He often, usually wrote up Jack Conklin, Darqueze Dennard, Trey Waynes, all these guys, right? Like that these defensive tackles that they would find. And when that stops, like, and you can't play like that anymore. And so like, we would tell people this, like, look, the roster can't handle this. It's not, there's still a little bit there to give you that like accent. Maybe it's okay, but like, it's not going to last. And they had to restart it. So like, yeah, you're just going to have to develop. You're going to have to recruit. And I think right now their strategy is what it should be. Just go, anybody want to come here? We'll give you a chance to start. If you want, you can come in here and build your own legacy and we'll see what happens. But yeah, you got to develop, because you're not going to get draft picks unless you start getting draft picks, right? Like, that's, you're not going to get draft picks to sign with you unless you start putting more in the league. And, you know, that's going to have to be step one here now, is to start a new streak if you can, you know, the best you can.
Right. Yeah. But Kevin asks, is it basketball season yet? Hey, Kevin, my man, we live in Michigan. Like, the weather just broke. Why are we rushing through the summer? I love basketball as much as anybody, but
let's just take a break.
Like, I've worn shorts twice.
Can I get outside for like can I get two sunburns before you make me go?
Damn.
Right. Can I get sunburned twice?
Yeah, man. Right before you make me. You got anything else over there?
No, I think we're good. That's okay. A good place to wrap it on. I don't know if there was any more. We could get into the Michigan draft question, but we've done that before. It's the same as everything else.
Yeah. Do we need to touch on, well, let's touch on Franz.
Okay.
We didn't touch on this earlier, right?
Yeah,
So it's because we're recording this Tuesday morning. It was put out there at 9 a.m. today that Franz is moving on. I would not say this was unexpected at all. From everything that, you know, I've been told, you know, the program was not in any way planning for even the possibility of him being around next year, hence why there's not even an open scholarship for him if he did want to come back. But yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how these pro teams evaluate Franz. You know, I think his upside and his skill set and his playmaking ability, talent, upside, all these things are pretty much without question. But there's some real questions. I mean, if you want to pick him apart a little bit, you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, whether it's his strength, whether it's his athleticism, whether it's, you know, 32% shooting on threes over two seasons at Michigan, his consistency, you know, exactly how he projects to the pros. From everything that's being put out there, he's a lottery pick. And, you know, at times that seems a little high to me, but I also get it.
Yeah,
I get why, but, and it's easier to question things when you've watched every game a guy played for 2 years, right? As opposed to the kid from whatever school who I watched the highlights of. I was like, yeah, that guy's awesome.
You're this
like,
guy is amazing. Right, Scottie Pippen, right. Part two.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
Franz moving on, though, but, you know.
I see it. I think he's got the physical traits that you're looking for if you're, mm-hmm. like, 12, you know, 11, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. But, yeah, no, there's a lot of questions. He's young, but there's a lot of questions. I think that's – but I think people have known that about Franz, right? Like, people have been scouting Franz for 3 years.
Sure.
You know, NBA people, or maybe longer. I don't know. Maybe when they realized who Mo was, they started looking at Franz. But, like, I think people probably understand that, right? Like, NBA teams probably get that he – you know, they know his path. He started, you know, not a traditional way as you'd see somebody who grew up here. He didn't play high school ball. He was playing with pros when he was 16, 17.
Right.
You know, limited minutes, and then he grows into this. And, I mean, yeah, we don't even really know what Franz – how many games did he play at Michigan where they really, really leaned on him and said, Franz, we need you to go the full, like, 40 here.
That's kind of the thing.
You know what I mean? Yeah, right. Like, we don't know how he holds up to that still.
Yeah, I mean, he had some really – you know, just tremendous games and things like that. But to your point, that those nights of being like, hey man, this is on you, you know, go get us the W, go make winning plays in the last 5 minutes. It was here and there, you know, a little bit down the stretch, but
not a lot.
Yeah. I mean, like the Iowa game this year, he was just tremendous.
Yeah.
At Indiana, he was tremendous. The Wisconsin game, I remember him being just, you know, unbelievable. And he did. He showed, you know, his game did grow this year, and he was bigger and stronger, and suddenly he had arms, and suddenly he had some shoulders on him and stuff like that. So, you know, I do think with him not turning – he hasn't turned 20 until August. You know, I'm sure there's NBA strength and conditioning programs that are looking at this guy and saying, you know, we can turn him into a grown-ass man in 3 years, you know. And if that's the case, I mean, he could really – work out, and he's got, you know, he's got some confidence to him, and you know, say what you will about that UCLA game, he still had the balls to take those shots, which a lot of guys, when you're 1 for 8, 1 for 9, and you're still willing to put it up, you know, that right or wrong.
A good point. That is such a good point. And I promise you, it's something that does well for him. And
he thought they were going in.
Yeah. He took every one of them.
He took them and he thought that they were going in. So,
that's a good point.
That says something. And I'm sure there are people that are still pissed about how that game went, but
that says a lot more than people probably think. Right. Yeah. That's a good point.
I would agree. All right. That's it. You good?
Yeah, man.
All right.
Right out of here.
Well, that'll do it. We appreciate everyone listening. Be sure to hop in the iTunes store, rate and review this podcast, share it with your friends, subscribe to The Athletic, and tip your bartenders and your servers. The place where I